The Nine Lives of Montezuma, and here we have his seventh life. Montezuma's boundaries extended as the years passed. He was satisfied as a young cat to roam close to home, returning regularly to the farmhouse for his meal. His favourite hunting grounds lay in the hedges, barns and fields around the farm. Here, hunting was a science, and with his knowledge of the ground and his wide experience, he could be assured of at least some kind of kill. Beyond, out in the wilderness, hunting was a more chancy affair, and though often more exciting, was invariably less successful. But there was another reason besides hunting for wandering abroad. The local she-cats had become few and far between, and a tomcat must chase the she-cats if he is any kind of tom. Already Montezuma had sired perhaps 100 kittens during his lifetime. Innumerable tabby farm cats, Persian cats, Siamese cats, and once a sleek aristocratic Abyssinian, all had fallen for his rough charm, and the parish was heavily populated with his progeny, many of whom possessed a telltale white patch on their throats. His success rate with the ladies merely spurred Montezuma to greater efforts, and he began to wander further and further afield in his search for new mates. It was during one of these expeditions that Montezuma overreached himself and came to grief. As the years passed, Matthew was taking more and more of the running of the farm on his own shoulders. It was corn harvest, and he had been busy combining the barley and bringing in the bales of straw. With his father and mother, he had spent all his waking hours out in the cornfields taking full advantage of a succession of blazing warm days. Every day's harvest was an emergency in case the weather broke before the next day, and they worked late every evening, bringing in the sacks and straw before the night came down. There was no time in all this to notice the cat, and so for 2 or 3 days no one realised that Montezuma was missing. By that time, Montezuma was a long way away and in deep trouble. Montezuma had never before ventured beyond the wide main road that cut through the hills several miles from the farm. He lay now in the long grass high above the road and watched the traffic flash by. His ears were back and his heart beat fast. This was not for him. He'd been here often enough on previous expeditions and surveyed the unexplored territory on the far side of the road, but always his better judgment had ruled him. This time, however, Montezuma had been following the scent of a she-cat, and the trail led him, like a magnet, down the steep slopes towards the edge of the road, and this time he had to cross. He had to go on. The road was a dual carriageway separated by a long strip of grass and shrubby trees. Montezuma took his time, judging all the while the speed of the cars as they approached. For several minutes he watched, his head turning this way and that, like an irregular metronome, until he was sure that the nearest car was far enough for the attempt to be made. His mind now made up, he sprang out into the road and skipped across the tarmac, hot under his paws. He reached the island with only seconds to spare, and springing up from the road into the sanctuary off the dusty grass. It was as he landed that he cut himself. As his back legs came down under him, he felt a sharp, stabbing pain in one of his rear paws. On 3 legs, he hobbled into the shadow of a thorn bush and lay down to assess the damage. Cautious licking revealed a long gash right across the central pad of his paw. He cleaned it thoroughly and then lay back in the shade to wait for the bleeding to stop. By late afternoon, he was ready to move on, but the expedition into the unknown lands on the other side of the road had to be abandoned. His one thought now was to get home to the safety of his farmhouse. He limped back through the grass to the edge of the road, carrying his injured paw well off the ground, and began the long wait for a sufficient pause in the flow of the traffic. The pauses came and went But the cat was unable to move. Each time he decided to wait for the next opportunity, and then the next, and the next. His confidence was disappearing. With only three legs at his disposal, his ability to calculate the risk had been upset. Once he did start out to make the crossing, but he found he could not gather up enough speed to make it in time. Halfway across, his nerve failed him, and he turned and scampered back to the island. And there he lay down again, dejected, and nursed his throbbing foot. On either side of him, the cars and lorries thundered by in an interminable, unbroken procession. And as the evening came, the traffic seemed to intensify. Montezuma lay besieged on his island, hunger, fear, and a loss of blood combining to make him tremble from head to foot. He was now totally confused and disoriented. He needed help, and so he called out for it, but his yowling was obliterated by the roar of the engines and the continuous swish of the tires on the soft tarmac. Sergeant Major Sidney Shannon hated roads and avoided them whenever he could. But this one lay across his path and had to be crossed. Old Sid, as he was known whenever he went in this part of the country, was a country tramp. He had long since given up on the world of people and rarely spoke to anyone unless he had to. His life was spent in the woods and fields, deep in the countryside, where men had not yet overrun the land completely. Here, there was still the quiet to listen to and the space to wander. But even here, the roads had come slicing through his fields. He regarded them as an intrusion, an invasion of his privacy, and the people who used them as marauding lemmings. He viewed them with a degree of detached pity and considerable contempt. Holding up his hand like a policeman, he strode out towards the island in the middle of the road, his kit bag over his shoulder. For hundreds of yards back, the cars squealed to a halt and set up an indignant honking of horns that old Sid ignored completely. As he approached the island at his regular, unhurried pace, he spied a cat in the grass, not more than a few yards from him. Oblivious to the abuse of the drivers behind him, old Sid unloaded the kit bag from his shoulder and held out his hand towards the cat. Montezuma's first instinct was to run, for it was a strange-looking being that confronted him. Old Sid was a tall man with a craggy, pitted face and a shock of completely white hair that fell down over his forehead. He wore what he always wore, summer or winter, his old heavy khaki trousers over a pair of high black boots and a drill khaki shirt done up at the neck. His greatcoat was in his pack, along with his billy can and his razor. "Don't be afeard, son," he said. "'Tis only old Sid and he'll not hurt you. Don't be afeard." The voice was warm and gentle, and Montezuma felt he had found a friend. He made no resistance as the old man knelt down beside him and made to stroke his head. The cat stood up, walked towards him, and pushed his head into the welcoming hand. "A bad paw, have you, son? We'll soon have that right, soon as we get out of this place. No use waiting for them, son. They never stop. They don't stop for people, and they hardly stop for a cat. They'd run you down first and then say sorry after. They're all in such a hurry." He picked the cat up in his hands, opened the end of his kit bag. "You stay there now and just watch." And with one arm around his kit bag, old Sid stepped out in front of the traffic and threw up his hand in an imperious gesture. He stood legs apart in the middle of the road, facing the cars until everything had come to a halt. "That's the way to do it, son," he said. "That's the only way." And he turned and walked slowly across the road. And once on the other side, he gave the angry motorists a mocking, courtly bow and then climbed the fence into the field beyond. "It must be this way you live," he said. "The other way is all people, and no cat in his right mind wants to be with people." For a few days after he realised that Montezuma was missing, Matthew did not worry unduly. He had known Montezuma now for nearly 10 years and had become convinced of his ability to survive anything. But after a week or so, even his conviction began to weaken. He would call for him at all corners of the farm where he was working, and he would ask anyone he met they had seen a battered-looking ginger Tom with a white throat, at whom he tried hard to disbelieve his father's pessimism. "There's any number of ways for a cat to die, any number," said his father, "and he's not immortal, you know." "He'll come back one day, you'll see," said Matthew. But even as he spoke, he knew he was deceiving himself. Cars, lorries, traps, drowning, poisoning. There's a lot of danger out there for a wandering Tom. Even a fox, you know. He'll take an old cat if there's nothing else. His father shook his head. "I shouldn't hope too much if I were you. 'Tis never worth it. Except the worst, that's what I say." "He's not that old, Dad," said Matthew, "and I'll not believe Monty's dead till I see his body for myself." The days came and went and stretched into weeks, and still Montezuma did not come home. Now even Matthew had to face the probability that Montezuma was dead. No one talked of him any more in the house. Even Matthew's father refrained from further speculation. Speculation now led always to the same conclusion, and that they kept private so that each should not reveal his worst misgivings to the other. After 3 weeks, Matthew's mother moved the cat box from the corner by the stove and took it out to burn in the orchard. Matthew noticed it was gone that evening, but he passed no comment. None was needed. Some miles away, in the water meadows that ran alongside the river, the old man and the cat had set up home in a deserted fishing hut. Montezuma's paw had healed cleanly, and he spent his convalescence sunning himself on the banks while old Sid fished for trout in the river. They lived on a diet of trout and milk. The milk was taken surreptitiously from a dreamy Jersey cow that grazed on a hill of buttercups nearby. She stood quite still, only occasionally turning a mildly inquiring eye to see what was going on underneath her. Old Sid talked to her all the while as he filled up his water flask with warm milk. And the trout were just as easy for the old man. He made his own flies from the cat's ginger fur and found discarded hooks hanging from the alders along the banks. It was never that long before the line jerked in his hand and he pulled in yet another sparkling trout. No cat would ever leave a diet of fresh trout and warm milk, and Montezuma was no exception. Every night, when he came back from his hunting in the meadows, he would find old Sid awake in the fishing hut, humming in a deep, gruff growl that contained a roll of drums on each note. And they were old marching songs, and he would hum them over and over again, his arm around the cat. Old Sid was not used to talking to anyone but himself, but now he had found the perfect audience. The cat would lie by him at night, and he would tell him what he had told no other living soul, and he would tell of the terrible war he had fought, and of the men who had died, of the men he had killed, of the bombing and the shooting and the fear. And he would tell of his return home to his family, to the street that had crumbled into rubble, to the graves of his wife and children. And he told of the hospital where they thought that he was mad, and the world outside where men still killed each other and where the bombs still fell. The cat lay and purred beside him as he talked, shooting his claws in and out of the greatcoat that acted as double blanket. "I'd have been happy as a cat," said the old man one evening as he looked down at his companion. "'Twould be good to not know anything." A few days later, the water bailiff came with a policeman and with the farmer that owned the Jersey cow and the Buttercup Hill. And old Sid was fishing when he saw them coming, and he threw his line in the river and drank down the last drop of milk. "Trouble," he whispered to the cat, "seems we've outstayed our welcome. You run along now, son, else they'll pull you in as well, and I shouldn't want that." But that cat sat where he was, beside him. "You again, Sid," said the water bailiff as he came closer. "You've been warned often enough." "Good afternoon to you as well," said old Sid. "Mr. Hiltstock here," the policeman said, taking off his cap and wiping his brow. "He says you've been at his Miranda." "Miranda?" old Sid asked. "Who's Miranda?" "My cow, that's who," said Mr. Hillstock, who had a red face and a jutting chin. "I seen you out there every evening milking her off." "Only a bit, farmer, only a bit, only just enough for me and the cat." The old man kicked out to one side at Montezuma. "Go on, son, get out of here, else they'll take you." But the cat ignored him and lay down just out of reach. "Not on, Sid," said the policeman. "'Tis poaching and theft and we can't have it." "Don't suppose he can, son," said old Sid. "But leave the cat be. He's done nothing. Just leave him be." "He might belong to someone," said the policeman. "He doesn't belong to anyone, son, like me. We're the same sort. That's why we get on so well." And he bent down and picked up a stone, which he threw at the cat. He spoke sharply now for the first time, and Montezuma pricked up his ears. "Get out of here, you dumb animal. Can't you see? They'll have you too. Get out of here." And Montezuma ran as the second stone flew past him. He dodged past the farmer who was making a grab for him and made off along the riverbank towards the woods. "Run," shouted old Sid, "run like blazes." And he cheered as the cat disappeared into the trees. "You'll not get him now, you'll not get him," he said. "But I'm ready for you. Just let me get my things." And that same evening, the first heavy spot of rain fell after the long harvest drought. The sky fell lower over the farm and turned a translucent lead. The flies vanished suddenly and dogs everywhere disappeared under tables at the first dull distant rumble of thunder. In the farmhouse, the electricity went off as the lightning struck and candles were brought out. Everyone went to bed early that night. There was little else to do, but they were awakened around midnight by a frantic knocking on the door. Matthew was first down. It was Mr. Varley, from the end of the lane. "Sorry to disturb you so late," he said, "but I thought I should tell you soon as I could." "What is it?" said Matthew, tying up his dressing gown. "Is something wrong?" "It's your cat, Matthew," he said. "You know, you asked me to keep an eye out for him." "Well, I did. And as I was coming home from meeting up in the village, I think I found him." "Montezuma, you found Monty?" His mother and father had joined Matthew, and the three of them spoke almost as one. "Where is he?" Matthew asked. "Where did you find him?" "He's in the car outside," said Mr. Varley, "but I'm afraid he's dead." "Dead?" Matthew found tears in his eyes for the first time since he was a child. "Not Monty? He's not dead. He can't be." His father pushed by him. "You sure, Mr. Varley? You sure it's him?" "Looks to be the same cat to me," he said. "I feel sure it is, but it's your cat and you'd know best. You'd best come and look yourself. That's the only way to be sure." They shone torches into the boot of the car while the rain lashed down on their backs. "It's him right enough," said Matthew's father. The dead cat was soaked to the skin, his fur matted and dark, but there was no doubt it was a ginger Tom with crumpled ears. Matthew picked him up in the blanket he lay in and carried him into the barn adjoining the house. He laid him down gently on the work table and they all looked again just to be sure. "Not been dead long, I shouldn't think," said Mr. Barley. "He was warm when I picked him up. Been knocked down, I shouldn't wonder. Trying to get home, he's all broken inside. I don't think he suffered." "That white patch doesn't look the same," said Matthew. "Looks a lot smaller than Monty's patch to me." "It's him all right, lad, no question," said his father, his hand on Matthew's shoulder. "No use clutching at straws, not now. It's Montezuma, and you'd best believe it." "That's him, Matthew," said his mother. "I'd know him anywhere, poor old thing." Matthew nodded slowly. "I'll bury him tomorrow," he said, covering the cat in the blanket. "I'll bury him out in the orchard, and then that will be that."